Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
For the first few years after the September 11th attacks, the area around the World Trade Center was generally known to us as Ground Zero, the spot where the worst terror attacks against our nation took place. But as we all know, the horror on that day extended well beyond New York City, first with the plane crash into the Pentagon.
It literally felt like the entire building lifted off of the foundation.
And then, in a field in western Pennsylvania, where Flight 93 slammed into the earth.
What happened out in this field in Pennsylvania was equally as horrific no less important. And sometimes it is mentioned almost like an afterthought.
This week on 880 In Depth, we will hear about the attack on the Pentagon from two hero service members who lived through it. How are they feeling as this 20th anniversary arrives? And we will also take you on a trip to Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and introduce you to a reporter there whose coverage on 9/11 that day hit close to home.
And there was a message on my answering machine. And as I hit the button, it was my dad calling. And, he said, "I don't know if you've seen any of the video of the crash site at Flight 93, he goes, "but those hemlock trees are ours."
Welcome to 880 In Depth. I'm Tim Scheldt. We here in New York focus so much of our attention on this anniversary on what happened here in New York City. And that's understandable. But on the morning of September 11th, with the Twin Towers burning in Manhattan, a third hijacked plane slammed into the nerve center of the U.S. Department of Defense. Retired U.S. Army Major General Byron Bagby remembers that day well.
"I will never forget the events that took place 20 years ago on September 11th of 2001. That's what I'm thinking, Tim. And for me, the attack was personal. As an American citizen who happened to be a uniformed military officer and working at the Pentagon on that day, this attack for me was personal."
When the attack began in New York, General Bagby was already hours into his workday at the Pentagon.
"At that time, Tim, I was a colonel. I was serving as the executive assistant to one of the Army's three-star primary staff directors. My day began like any other, in the office about 5:30 in the morning, and would usually get off about 9 on most days. And we'd gone through our morning updates, and we learned that a hijacked aircraft had struck the North World Trade Tower. We didn't think a lot about it at that time, Tim, because it may have been fog in lower Manhattan and a lot of air traffic coming out of JFK, Newark, and LaGuardia. But a few minutes later, the South World Trade Tower was struck by a hijacked aircraft. At this point, it had our undivided attention. And a little after 9:30 that morning, Tim, my superior and I were standing in his office watching CNN and the attack on the South World Trade Tower. And we were talking about how lucky we were that hadn't happened in the Pentagon with 27,000 workers, 40,000 commuters passing through every day on the subway and on buses, And a few minutes later, we heard a loud blast, and we felt this large building called the Pentagon shake. And we thought it was a truck bomb initially, and later learned that it was another hijacked aircraft that had struck the southwest corner of the Pentagon.
Major General Bagby remembers working to help evacuate the building and hours later account for all those within his unit. That process lasted well into the next morning, and sadly, among those killed at the Pentagon that day were two service members within his command unit.
It was difficult, Tim, and with our two deceased service members, my superior determined that he would notify the officer's wife of her husband's death, and he asked me to notify the next of kin of the sergeant that passed away. I took with me on that notification, Tim, a chaplain and a sergeant who knew the deceased. And by military policy at that time, the sergeant's official next of kin was her six-year-old daughter. And Tim, I have never done anything harder in my entire life. I'd made notifications in the past, but they were all to adults, parents, spouses, or siblings. But for me to notify a six-year-old that her mother was deceased, for me, was extraordinarily hard. And I think that what got to me most is I'm not sure if she really understood what our team was telling her at 6 years old. I don't think I would recognize that when I was 6 years old. But Tim, by far, notifying that young lady that her mom was deceased is the hardest thing that I have done in my entire life.
Sir, we spend most of our time here in New York rightfully so, focused on the World Trade Center, our community, the lives lost, the damage done, the impact, the human impact, the human toll, the physical toll. We never forget the Pentagon. It's always on our minds. It's part of the memorial at the World Trade Center. The names of those who were lost at the Pentagon are on the wall there at the fountains in New York City. But it does seem that the Pentagon tends to get short shrift. I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but it tends to be an afterthought, and I'm wondering what you think about that.
I would tend to agree with you, Tim. On July 4th of 2002, my wife and I went to an Independence Day event near the U.S. Capitol. It was a performance of speakers and patriotic music. And during the event, Tim, the master of ceremony talked about the horror of what happened in New York City on 9/11. I don't recall him mentioning the Pentagon once in that two-hour performance, even though the U.S. Capitol is about 4 miles from the Pentagon. I don't recall him mentioning that once. And my wife made that comment to me. So I do think that even though we had 184 people who perished at the Pentagon, I do think that most of the focus on 9/11 that I've seen the past 20 years has been on what happened at the lower Manhattan and the World Trade Towers.
What would you like us to be thinking about 20 years later with respect to what happened at the Pentagon that day?
What I would convey to you and your listening audience, Tim, is that the 184 people who perished at the Pentagon that morning were not nameless, faceless people. They were parents, grandparents, siblings, aunts, uncles, friends, and neighbors. The death of the 184 who died at the Pentagon probably affected more than 100,000 people, directly or indirectly. But I think that those who perished at the Pentagon should receive the same amount of focus as those from New York City. But those who perished were not just numbers. They had families. They had friends. They had classmates. And the second thing I would tell you, Tim, is that this terrorist attack was a national crucible for our nation. And I think it helped unite our nation, because within an hour of the attack happening, there were clergy from every faith imaginable that came to the Pentagon to perform last rites and help provide counsel to those who may have been affected in some way. And there were emergency medical teams and other first responders from around the Washington, D.C. area that responded to provide their services. And so I think that even though this attack was a national crucible, it helped to bring our nation together for a common cause.
I really appreciate your time, General. It was an honor and a pleasure to talk to you.
That sounds great, Tim. Thanks for the opportunity.
Like General Bagby, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Ted Anderson remembers the morning of September 11th like it was yesterday. Stationed at the Pentagon as a legislative affairs officer, he recalls watching in horror as the World Trade Center Twin Towers burned on live television. Suddenly, his phone rang. It was his then-wife, a sixth-grade teacher in North Carolina, looking for help in explaining the horror unfolding to her students.
And she called me right after the plane had hit the second tower here in New York. And she was live with her students all in the background listening as I'm trying to describe to these kids what a coordinated attack was. And you know, we did not know what was going on, but please don't ever jump to conclusions, because the last time we jumped to a conclusion, it was actually homegrown terrorism, and it was in Oklahoma. And no sooner than I said that, no sooner than I finished my sentence, the airplane hit our building. It literally felt like the entire building lifted off of the foundation and slammed back down. I mean, I was so shocked at the concussion of it all. It was remarkable.
Ted Anderson has been honored as a hero for rescuing co-workers at the Pentagon that day. Anderson helped many people evacuate. He led many of the injured outside of the building to safety, and in one case, helped free a woman inside who was pinned beneath a heavy file cabinet. Ted Anderson was a true American hero that day, so you may be surprised to hear him say,
I'm not proud of anything that occurred on 9/11, anything that I was a part of. I'm not proud of any of that, because I always saw that as mission failure. Not being able to get the people out.
Firefighters had arrived, and those emergency responders ordered Ted Anderson and other Pentagon workers to stand down. They literally had to hold them back from running back inside the burning building. Ted Anderson and I met up recently here in New York at the World Trade Center site. I had interviewed him 19 years ago while working on the year anniversary. I looked him up again because I will never forget what he told me about the day after the attacks at the Pentagon.
What was so moving about the 12th is that you had about 18,000 people report to work in a burning building because, A, we were at war, B, their battle station was inside the Pentagon, and C, they did not have to be called to work. They showed up voluntarily. So to be a part of that, I always thought was overwhelming.
Today, the names of those who died at the Pentagon that day, those from inside the building, and those who were on Flight 77, are forever etched along the South Tower fountain at the World Trade Center. And may we never forget them. And may we never forget the heroes of Flight 93. By all accounts, they knew terrorists had flown planes into the World Trade Center and Pentagon that day. They knew that if they did not act, their plane would become the next terror tool, very likely in the nation's capital. But as we now know, those aboard Flight 93 attacked the cockpit. They fought the hijackers, and the plane dove from the sky into a farm field in western Pennsylvania.
Shanksville from New York City is just over 300 miles.
Our reporter Sean Adams took a trip there weeks ago to see what Shanksville looks like today.
You travel out across beautiful pastoral lands in Pennsylvania. You go through the Allegheny Mountains, and then you get off of the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and you follow some winding country roads. It's hilly country out there. And then you get to the site. The site is off the road, a few miles. And the first thing that you happen upon when you enter the property, and this is relatively new, is a tower that has 40 wind chimes, one wind chime for each passenger killed on Flight 93. And the area is known to be windy. There are actually, you'll pass some wind turbines on the way in, and the day I was there, there was no wind, but it's supposed to be a very moving tribute to have these echoes out there in this open field. And then you drive into the property, it's probably about 2 miles in, and you come to the visitor center, and the visitor center sits atop a hill. And there's a walkway, and at first I didn't understand the significance of the walkway. The walkway comes out to, it ends, it's like a promenade at the end of the bluff, and then it drops down to the field where the crash actually occurred. That walkway is in line with the flight path of Flight 93. And the visitor center is quite moving. The National Park Service has exhibits there, interpretive exhibits. They do have artifacts that were recovered from the field. They have information about September 11th, the timeline, what happened with Flight 93, what happened on board, the fact that passengers had time to make phone calls, to get information, to talk to loved ones, to talk amongst themselves, make the decision that they were going to fight back. And that's what led to the ultimate crash.
Pretty peaceful place, isn't it?
Incredibly beautiful. I was quite taken with the natural beauty of it. This was an abandoned strip mine. It was the field itself was coal was dug out of the ground there, so it was basically a barren patch of land bordered by groves of trees. The National Park Service has reclaimed this old strip mine and replanted this once barren field with wildflowers. All vibrant colors come to life, almost like a Monet painting. And then you're greeted on all sides by the sweet sound of songbirds, just chirping and singing. So it's a very peaceful place. And I think that was the point. The point was to reclaim the spot where something so horrible happened and to make it peaceful. And because it is the final resting place for the passengers of Flight 93. When you followed the road around to the bottom of the field, there's a walkway, there's a wall that prevents you from going to the actual impact zone. That is reserved for family members only. If you follow that wall, it leads to another wall of stone slabs with the names etched in them. It was quite emotional when I looked at one of the names, and then it also said that passenger, she and her unborn child, she was pregnant. That wall also mirrors the flight path, the final flight path, and then it ends at a gate, and then beyond in the field, there's a large sandstone boulder that marks the impact zone, and that the significance of that is that sandstone boulder was excavated during the mining, so to represent the past of this property, that's what is the final monument of the impact zone. And then just beyond, there's a grove of hemlock trees. And when the plane came in, it came in very fast. It came in inverted, belly up, and crashed, and it just disintegrated into little pieces. Very little was the largest piece recovered was maybe 6 feet, but a lot of those pieces just flew in every direction into that grove of hemlock trees. The fuel ignited a fire and burned a section of the trees there, and that's where a lot of the investigation had to take place.
Sean Adams was one of the reporters who bravely covered the World Trade Center attacks in New York City on 9/11. That cloud of toxic dust chased him, along with countless others, right out of Lower Manhattan that morning. On his visit to Shanksville, Sean connected with a Pennsylvania reporter who had his own 9/11 story. Meet Tim Lambert.
And on the way into work, I remember hearing about a plane that had gone down in near Shanksville, Somerset County, and it sort of hit in my brain that my dad grew up in Shanksville, and he might know some people in that area that I could maybe call later and find out what exactly was going on. And then a little bit later on in the afternoon, you know, it was just the chaos of the day. I looked up at the television in the newsroom, and there was a reporter who was standing on the corner of the Shanksville-Lambertsville Road. And at that point, a lot of the coverage about Flight 93 has been was that it crashed in a reclaimed strip mine. But when I saw where that reporter was standing, it dawned on me that we still own 163 acres in near Shanksville, and it was near that intersection. So my antenna went up, and then I just sort of went on with my day, covered a prayer vigil, and I didn't get home until about 1:30 in the morning on September 12th to my Gettysburg apartment. And there was a message on my answering machine. And as I hit the button, it was my dad calling. And, you know, he said, "I don't know if you've seen any of the video of the crash site at Flight 93. He goes, "But those hemlock trees are ours." And at that point, you know, my mouth sort of dropped open and I kind of stared at the machine a little bit, like, did I just hear what I think I heard?
Tim Lambert is a newsman from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and that day he went straight to work and was reporting and working. Well, it turns out that grove of hemlock trees that that I talked about, his family owned that property. His grandfather had purchased a big parcel a long time ago. He built some cabins on it. They never really did much with it. The property stayed in his family, got passed onto Tim. And he really never thought about it except when it came time to pay the tax bill. So now, all of a sudden, he has a personal connection to it. And there are, I believe, are six property owners. And so because it was their land, they had to be brought into the process. So the medical examiner invited him out and took him around and showed him everything. And, you know, now he's in a position where he's not just covering the story, he's part of the story.
How can you comprehend the odds of a national tragedy occurring on a piece of property basically in the middle of nowhere? It's not a piece of property, as you found out driving to the memorial. It's not easy to get to. It's easier now than it was 20 years ago. But yeah, it just was one of those things where I'm a history buff. I lived and worked in Gettysburg for 7 years. So I was immersed in how the National Park Service works and history. And it occurred to me that this was going to be a historic moment, and it was going to be something that our family was going to be a part of moving forward. So, you know, a lot of thoughts went through my mind. And of course, the tragedy of having 40 people lose their lives on that very land that, you know, I was, you know, having a carefree youth in years before. So it was just a heavy weight that you felt, and you know, you had to really think about how do we want to move forward to make sure that this land is going to be protected and make sure that these 40 people are going to be honored and remembered for what they did.
Tim Lambert is an award-winning journalist for the public radio station in Harrisburg, a good one, WITF. Tim's also a friend of mine who I've gotten to know over the years. But what I'm most proud of is how he made sure that his family did all in its power to make sure the National Park Service could forever use this land to honor those who died in Flight 93. Weeks back from his trip to Shanksville, I asked our reporter, Sean Adams, what is your lasting impression of visiting Shanksville? And I assume you would recommend that those who have not been there go there.
I think the lasting impression is this. Shanksville is equally as important as the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And the feeling out there sometimes is that it gets overshadowed. Obviously, the World Trade Center just, it's this It was so large and so visible and so horrific. And the Pentagon, a symbol of our government, again, so horrific. But what happened out in this field in Pennsylvania was equally as horrific and no less important. And sometimes it is mentioned almost like an afterthought. Tim Lambert said he read something once in a newspaper, and it said World Trade Center, Pentagon, and in parentheses, a field in Pennsylvania. They want people to realize that what happened there was important, and this is the reason why. The people on board that plane made a decision, basically, in essence, to sacrifice themselves to save other people. And that is extremely heroic, and it should be remembered.
880 In Depth is a production of WCBS News Radio 880. Peter Haskell and myself, Tim Scheld, are the executive producers. Dempsey Pilott helped put this week's show together. Subscribe to the show as a podcast for listening on your own time. Just search 880 In Depth wherever you get your audio. Thank you for listening. Be safe and never forget.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.